Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
Now, my next guest is a country music singer called Hank Wankford. That's because he hails from the town of Wankford in Sussex. He writes travel articles for The Guardian. He's the president of the Nude Mountaineering Society. Many years ago, he met Graham Parsons, the famous Graham Parsons from the Byrds, a meeting that changed his life. He studied medicine at Cambridge University and became a doctor. So you could say he's a physician with a musical mission. And I just said it. He's an outspoken feminist and he works at a birth control clinic and he's released a bunch of albums and he's got a new one out now and he's done an awful lot of other things as well. So Hank Wankford, how are you, Hank? It's been, oh crikey, 100 years?
No, not quite. You're exaggerating.
Oh, sorry.
But about 35, anyway.
Okay, about 35. Okay, fair
enough. Lifetime, in any case, whichever way you look at it.
A lifetime, indeed. Some people have their second album and they call it the difficult second album. You now have the troublesome 10th album, Holy Holy. The new album with a title that might be about the holes in life, might be about the potholes we all go through, but could it be about the holes in the roof in Galway where you might have been living?
Yes, it was. It was a hole in the roof. When I was having trouble writing songs, because that's where I write, out in Connemara.
You write in Connemara. And like it's the usual ruminations of love, life and death. I mean, you know, it's Hank Wankford, yeah?
Well, I guess so, you know, and try not to write about tides and sea and ocean and, you know, wind and all the sort of usual Connemara subjects. And I managed to, although there's a couple of songs on this one. One called Over the Horizon is another horizon. Which is direct from that, because the wee house is sitting right on the Atlantic, you know, and so I keep staring at the waves.
Yeah, and the sad stuff there as well. There is a song to a friend of yours who's died.
There is, yeah. It's a pretty song, even though I say that myself. Yeah, a lovely man, a sound man, a sound engineer who was did 1,000 gigs with us in the early 80s, and he died sadly. There's also a song to one of my childhood heroes, Joseph Stalin.
Right.
I know. Not one of my grown-up heroes, I have to add.
Right, but, okay. But, I might get to that. There's so many things I do want to get to. Like, for instance, what you do, Hank Wankford, in so many ways, Hank, is, like, it's kind of, you know, you kind of satirise country's absurdities, as has been said before, but you love the music. And, like, back in the 80s, you were playing it to a bit of a post-punk audience. Did you think in some ways that, here's Hank, he's good fun, and etc., and that maybe the good fun translated itself into the word joker and people didn't take you as seriously as they should have?
Well spotted. Completely that happened. And but that's, you know, that's a rope I'm hanging myself with. Listen, if I go around calling myself Hank Wankford, I'm obviously not taking myself seriously. Or protecting myself against doing it seriously. But I do love the music and I love that. And I think people are finally realising that I'm serious about it underneath. But hey, look, especially in these times, you've got to be able to laugh at the misery.
Absolutely. You know? And I presume as a doctor, you would prescribe that in terms of a lot of people's illnesses.
Oh, completely. Yeah. And if somebody walks out of the clinic laughing, you know, and smiling, they're halfway better already.
Yeah,
sure.
Indeed. Okay, well, just let's stay with the doctor bit then for the moment, the Dr. Sam Hutt bit, which is the real bit, the rock and roll doctor in terms of your name anyway. There's one thing about the rock and roll doctor side of things and the patients you might have seen, the people you might have seen, and I know there's, you know, client-patient privilege and all the rest of it that you don't want to say anything, but I can tell you that you've seen Pink Floyd, Ian Dury, The Clash, The Grateful Dead, Keith Moon, Family, Roy Harper, and also Kevin Ayers. And of all of those, I just want to ask about one, because I loved him and I'd never met him. Kevin Ayers, what was he like?
Kevin Ayers, what can I say? In a word, he was a funny man. He was quite reticent. He held himself in, you know, but he was a good English eccentric. But then my manager, who was an old mate of mine, who managed a lot of those people. I mean, I got to know the Floyd and Kevin and the Soft Machine and people like that because Pete Jenner managed them. And Pete Jenner sort of loved eccentric English rock and rollers. And Kevin was one of those people.
He was one of the greats. I think all he ever wanted to do was not be famous, but just go off to France and drink wine, which is exactly what he did do. OK, well, there's so many other parts of you that I just want to mention here. So where will I go from there? How about, if I mentioned the patients from the world of rock and their oversized egos and all the rest of it, which I'd love to go into in detail. In 1999, you did a tour of the Falklands. How does one do a tour of the Falklands?
By being asked. For some reason. Yeah, you know, somebody in the Falklands was an old Wankford fan. And they said, would you like to come and tour the Falklands? I said, yeah. You know, so you get on an RAF plane for 18 hours, stop off at Ascension Island, which is a rock in the middle of the Atlantic, and then you get to the Falklands, which is completely mad. It's totally loony. It makes the Hebrides or the Blaskets look overpopulated.
And then when I look at the BBC programmes that you've done, like £9 Hammer, which would be about, you know, railroad songs, or Genghis Khan Was a Cowboy Too, where you traced country from its Mongolian roots.
Yes. That's weird, you know, because you say that, oh yeah, country western came from the southern shores of Lake Baikal, and you throw it up as a weirdness. Of course, it's nonsense you make up, but just to make a link with all the kind of music you want to play from right across Asia up to Mongolia. And incidentally, I love Mongolian music and the bizarre Mongolian singing. But then you find out, you know, as so often happens, and you must have found that too, Dave, that then it turns out there were a bunch of Turkmen musicians who were Mongolians who then went to Turkey, who then went to the Appalachians.
Right.
So, you know, in a weird way.
So an education for us and an education for you to do all these things as well, I'd say. I'd say they were all great fun.
And
I just want to get back to your patience and the rock and roll doctor thing, because one person I didn't mention is the Keith Richards from the Rolling Stones. Now, when Graham Parsons came to London to hang with Keith Richards, there was a bit of a kind of a moment for you, wasn't there, from Graham?
It was the flash, because before that I was sort of an R&B boy, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought country was crap. You know, I really didn't like country at all. I didn't get it. And even when Graham had joined the Byrds and they did that album, Sweetheart of the Rodeo, I was a huge Byrds fan and I didn't like that album because it didn't have kind of the soaring harmonies from before. But then when he formed the Burrito Brothers, there was a trick about it, you know. It had a sort of rock and roll sensibility about it. And I think a lot of people like me got pulled in without thinking we were listening to country music. And we were listening to quite raggedy honky-tonk music. Anyway, he was hanging out with Keith. Keith knew me because I'd seen him for his little baby boy, Marlon. And he sent Graham and his wife up just, you know, for a standard sort of medical meet. But when he came up, I had Fred Neil on the record player. And I don't know if folks out there in RTE Radioland know about Fred Neil. But he was a very important man in Greenwich Village. And was really quite a god there. Most people know him only now because he wrote two famous songs, one called The Dolphins and one called Everybody's Talking, which became the theme for Midnight Cowboy.
By Nielsen.
Nobody thought that Nielsen wrote it, but he sang it.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, I had Fred Neil on the record player, and Graham comes in and says, hey, that's Freddie Neil. And you know when somebody recognises somebody who's dear to your heart but you think is kind of nobody knows about? You're kind of pleased they know about it, but you kind of get off my land. You know, Fred Neil's mine. What are you talking about? Hey, that's Freddie Neil. And he says, oh, I played with him. You played with Fred Neil. And it turns out it's Graham Parsons. And then he picked my guitar up and played a song called Empty Bottle of Broken Heart and You're Still on My Mind, which when I last saw you a lifetime ago in Ireland, I would have played every gig just as a celebration of the fact that I got turned onto this music, which I realised has fantastic soul, is great music. You know?
Well, funny, you did turn me on. So I remember you mentioned the Louvain Brothers, which I didn't know much about. And I did check them out because of what you had told me. And yes, I liked it very much indeed. Oh, anyway, you saw the soul of country in a flash when that kind of thing happened. I'm going to jump around now and go back to Dr. Sam Hutt, because, you know, you spent your life specialising in women's sexual and contraceptive care. And this was an area that really wasn't a happening thing when, you know, women's healthcare thing was happening. And you joined the Margaret Pike Centre. What did it all mean in the 1970s in terms of, like, we really need to get something going here?
Well, you're quite right. It was one of the great unexplored areas. You know, women were poorly served. And up until the pill was an extraordinary thing for women because suddenly they could take charge of their own fertility. They weren't, you know, slaves to getting pregnant and having to have baby upon baby on baby or abortion upon abortion. And it released them a lot. So for me, when I went in and I did a family planning course, I thought, this is fantastic. This is... you see, there's a liberation for women happening here, and I really wanted to do it. A lot of my colleagues thought, what do you want to do that for? It's not real medicine. What do you mean it's not real medicine? Well, you know, you don't get any big tumours, you know. I said, no, you get healthy people and you try and keep them healthy. Have you ever heard of you know, preventive medicine. And it was the beginning of all that. And I found it fascinating. So I've stuck with it ever since. That's been my life in medicine.
Yeah, but so many other parts of your life in medicine. For instance, in Transylvania, you set up two clinic projects for women, but also you trained doctors and nurses in Bosnia and Georgia during the war?
In Bosnia, yeah. Yeah, it was quite hairy. We were supposed to go to Sarajevo, but that was blockaded at that time. So we went to a town called Zenica. Yeah, and you went through Mostar and you're under the Chetniks' tank guns. And not good. It was very, very bad, as you know.
Well, I haven't been there, but I will certainly believe you. By the way, we are talking to Hank Wankford, who may be getting on, but still getting on with it. And by the way, in case I forget, happy birthday. 80 coming up around the corner. It's a couple of weeks.
80 coming up. If that isn't getting on, I don't know what is.
Right, exactly. Well, I want to talk about one very important thing, too, because I'm not even too sure if you'll still be able to do it, but I'm pretty sure you'd want to, which is, let's get this right, the joys of trouserless peaking. Like, if you go onto the website of Hank Wankford, it's brilliant. You want to check this thing out. There's your bare bottom, and you click on your bum, and you're in. And what are you in? It's basically skinny gripping. Is that what you call it? At great heights? Basically, you know, people who successfully climb Everest, although you haven't done that one, but you have done Connemara and Twelve Bends and Yosemite and the Appalachians. Because basically, we're talking here about nude mountaineering. Tell me about it, Hank.
Well, it came, there was a famous picture of a loony called George Mallory in the 20s. He was probably the first man to hit the top of Everest, but we will never know, .. You know, his body was found 1,000 feet below the peak years and years later. And there's this famous picture of him and two mates down at base camp without their trousers on. And George is completely naked, except for his rucksack and his trilby. And I thought, that's great. That's real English madness. So let's go for it. And then I tried it on Tully Mountain. I remember I don't climb the whole mountain naked, but you get on the top and you take everything off. It's great. It's a real release. You know, you feel the wind. It's a beautiful thing. A guy came up there and saw us and thought there was some weird sexual kind of deviation going on the top, turned on his heel and ran away. But I did it on the bends. I did it up Diamond Hill. So Connemara is well covered.
As opposed to you. Okay, so wait a minute. So you don't climb naked. You just take all your clothes off when you're at the
top. No. I'm a bit of a cheat, really.
I see, right. And do you think that Mallory might have gone with the trouserless, with the trousers down approach as a kind of the ultimate gesture? I mean, there's nothing to offend the spirits of great mountains here. You're not trying to do that.
No, but there was the story that I covered. Of a Sherpa who, when he got to the top, he stripped down on the top of Everest. And the Nepalese climbing society were really angry and said that did offend the spirits of the mountain. And he defended himself, said, no, I'm honouring the spirits of the mountain. How best to honour them than to strip down on top of Everest? You know, this is my act of honouring. But they wouldn't understand it.
So there's no certificate or no membership paraphernalia because, as you say yourself, where would you put them?
I ought to organise that.
Right, OK. And so it basically is, it's a freedom-loving movement transcending mere borders. So basically, if people want to get involved and get their pictures up there, will front or rear view acceptable, top of the mountain shots?
Whatever you like, you know. It depends whether you don't want to frighten the horses.
Right, indeed, yes. So all like-minded mountain strippers can check it out there. And by the way...
it's worth it, just like skinny dipping. Yeah, is great. You know, stripping on top of a mountain, it is genuinely a real release. It's lovely.
Right, indeed. It's all about strippers with altitude. And you are the president, right?
I'm the self-styled president, Mr. Fanning.
The self-styled president. Very good, indeed. I tell you, do you know that program, The Chase, is it? I think it is on TV. And you were an answer in a question there. And maybe it's not called The Chase.
Yeah,
it's brilliant. Like, you know, which one of these guys here, one of these guitarists, is in charge of the nude climbing the mountain society kind of stuff? And they said Julian Bream, John Williams, or Hank Wankford. They roared at your name and they said Julian Bream.
Julian Bream, I know.
I think there was. Okay, and by the way, what's the Lost Cowboys thing of Hank Wankford, Volume 3, The Middle Years?
Well, that's a kind of Volume 3. It's the middle years of my autobiography, with the idea of having a 5-volume autobiography. So this one is covered. It covers really the time when I met you. You know, it's the 70s. It was the it's coming to terms with Hank in the first place.
Coming,
Sam Hart. It kind of takes a back seat for a bit.
Sam Hart takes a back seat for a bit one more time. Even though you do lecture and you train nurses and all that in the UK, there's so many things you've done. But just let's go back to the album finally then. And for this is the troublesome 10th album. I mean, where did you record this album?
We recorded it in a studio in Hackney. We did the tracks and then overdubbed Roy Dodds, who was the drummer with a band called Fairground Attraction and has been our drummer for a few years. I did a lot of the overdubs in his kitchen.
And would you have written a lot of the songs in Connemara?
I wrote all of them in Connemara.
Oh.
But well, I've just been up in Norwich. At last I've broken it, because it's a bit, you know, up yourself to say, oh, I can only write in Connemara, I can't write in England. But I've got about 7 or 8 good new songs. So I'm ready for another album.
Okay, well, if I'm to pick a song now to play from the album, what'll it be?
Well, we mentioned Holy Holy, and it's the title track. You could do that. People might like that.
Let's go for it, Holy Holy. But just before I do go for Holy Holy, I never even asked you about being a youngster growing up. It's just a very quick one. Your dad was a communist through and through, but was he an expert on something? Was he the number one on printing? Is that what it was?
Yeah, he was a typographer, which is the guy who sets a newspaper designs a newspaper. So for years and years, they used to have a newspaper design award. And the Times and the Daily Worker, because Dad was the chief sub of the Daily Worker, kept winning that. And then he became the president of the NUJ, the National Union of Journalists. So he was a union man. And we did have Uncle Joe Stalin's picture in our kitchen. You know, he was truly a Stalinist. The family got broken up at the time of Hungary, which you may be too young to remember.
I've read about it. Yes, indeed. By the way, just as a matter of interest, in terms of unions and trade unions and anti-racist stuff that you would have done in that, do you remember being attacked by skinheads when you were on stage doing the Hank, Frank and Billy, the Billy being Billy Bragg?
Yeah. That was the GLC sort of celebration in the middle of the miners' strike in 1984.
Yeah,
we got done over by some skinheads, but luckily we survived.
Done over by some skinheads. Okay, on that note, I should ask the final question is this. Are you keeping up with your cowpat flinging?
No, I haven't done that for a long time.
Thought you might get a few samples in the West. All right, listen, it's been a pleasure as usual. Sam, I'll say for a second, but Hank Wangford, it really has. Holy Holy is the name of the new album. Hank, thanks so much for talking to us, and we'll see you back on the road soon.
Okay, I hope so, Dave. I want to get back.
Yeah. Good man. See you, Hank. Good luck.
All right. Bye now.
Bye. Dave Fanning, Weekends on 2FM.